Hello and welcome to our first ever Building Stronger Families podcast. I'm Kim Wright, the communication specialist for Here I Am Orphan Ministries, and I'm also the mom of four daughters, two biological and two adopted. Today we're going to be joined by my friend Carrie Henson, but first I wanted to give a little bit of an overview of Building Stronger Families. Here I Am Orphan Ministries is committed to caring for orphans at all stages of their lives, even after adoption. So because adopted children often come from very difficult circumstances, many times adoptive families face challenges that biological families just may not encounter. So to that end, we want to address some of those challenges and help our adoptive families as much as possible to grow their families into healthy, joyful, God-loving people. So we will be inviting experts to join us on our podcast to share some insights on some issues that adoptive families might encounter and just pick their brains. So today we're going to be joined by registered dietitian Carrie Henson, who's going to give us some insights on how nutrition might impact our families and particularly our kiddos who come from a trauma background. So good morning, Carrie, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Kim, for having me. I'm very excited and passionate about this topic. I think that nutrition can make a huge difference with families and with children and growing into those healthy adults, as you mentioned. So a little bit about myself. I am a registered dietitian, as Kim said. I got my undergraduate degree in clinical nutrition at Texas Tech University and then went on to get my graduate and my master's of science at Texas Women's University. And so I've gained a lot of experience in using all of that information that I learned in school when I worked for about 5 years in the mental health, mental retardation part of at a state hospital in Terrell, Texas, and really got to put a lot of my nutritional background to work with kids in difficult situations as they work through some of their issues that they had. And then since then, I've been in private practice, just seeing patients privately from all different types of nutritional issues. So that's a little bit about me, Kim.
That's great, because we're actually going to touch on that later in the conversation. But before we get to those topics, I was just wondering if you might tell us a little bit about the role that nutrition plays in overall health and how nutrition and fitness work together to maintain your overall health.
Well, that is a big question, Kim, and just a good one to start with, I guess. Our nutritional status is involved in all systems of our bodies. It's included, our heart health has a lot to do with our longevity, of course. There's lots of information about heart health in the news constantly. Gut health, the health of our guts and how that affects our mental capacities and our ability to fight off diseases. Cognitive health, a lot of times with learning disabilities and that kind of thing. And then also the onset of Alzheimer's and all those disease states that can develop later in life is directly related to nutrition. And then also our muscular system and how that works. And that kind of plays with our fitness level and how those two things, nutrition and fitness being active, all come together to equip our bodies to work the way God has designed them to work.
That's interesting. You mentioned our muscular health, which I think for international adoptive families, that's something that probably they deal a lot with, because many of the children who are adopted internationally spend a lot of time isolated in cribs and they may not develop their muscular health the way that they should have. And then mental health and learning disabilities, I think, plays in for all of our trauma background kiddos. So I'm interested to hear more about that. What do you think some of the biggest misconceptions are about healthy eating and eating for health?
Well, boy, that is a big question too, Kim, and one that can be affected a lot by each individual's background and where they come from. It's usually related a lot to the background where they come from, and then also, you know, every individual, I mean, we have a lot of, my kids have a lot of misconceptions, honestly, about healthy eating because the impact of social media, friends. So there's so many things that can come in and affect our idea of healthy eating. It can be a lot of different things. What does, you know, one thing that is a big misconception right now is, you know, should I eat only protein and fat and no carbohydrates? That's something that a lot of people are listening to right now that sometimes can lend to unhealthy outcomes in your chemistry, in your gut. So that would be one that I think is a big misconception. What are some specific ones that you've heard about, Kim, that you feel like with your family and having discussions with them that they struggle with a lot?
To that topic that you were discussing with the social media and the friends and the protein-based diets, my older daughters, my biological daughters, I see a lot of that playing in. You see a lot of things about the keto diet and those kinds of things. But I wanted to talk to you a minute and touch on that subject of social media, because that is a big impact on especially our teenagers, and even teenagers who come from trauma backgrounds. Once they're adopted, they're going to be impacted by that social media and our visual media driven culture. They already come with issues with food and eating from their background, and then you throw that in on top of it. So do you have any suggestions for adoptive parents who feel like that their adopted child or their biological child might be struggling with an eating disorder or just some unhealthy thinking about food?
Yes, and I think that's the biggest issue really when we talk about anything regarding nutrition is where to find good information. Where do you find that kind of information so that you can get the facts of what good, sound nutritional advice is versus what's in the media? And so I think the biggest thing, you know, there's a lot of sources out there on the web. And one of the best sources is eatright.org, which is the national website for the Academy of Dietetics, which is our governing entity. And all of the information found on that is all evidence-based nutrition. So it's based on sound science principles that have been researched. And that is the biggest, I think, measuring tool or measuring stick that parents need to understand, is when you're getting your information, is it evidence-based, meaning that it is backed by studies that have been done with a sound source. So a lot of colleges have really good research modalities, Harvard, Mayo Clinic, the American Heart Association, all of those kind of places that are backed with sound research-based nutritional principles is where one would need to start to find that, not particularly in ads that show up on your social media or that kind of thing. And so that's been one of the biggest challenges with my children. I've got three, and two of them are in their teen years, one's 20, and it's just making sure that they understand where good sound nutritional information comes from. Is that kind of hitting the nail on what you're asking me?
Yes, that's perfect. And absolutely, because social media, well, technology in general can be a blessing and a curse. We have so much information at our fingertips, but it's so difficult to sort through what is good information and what is not good information. So that website was eatright.org, but all of these resources that you're sharing, we're for our listeners. We're going to be putting those together on a handout. And so once this podcast is made available, that information will also be on our website with these other websites and resources, so that if you hear something that piques your interest and you want to go back and look at it, you can have an opportunity to do that. And I know I certainly will, because I definitely have some things I want to look into a little more deeply, but I appreciate you giving us those very much. I did want to ask you, we see a lot in our culture right now about body positivity, and it's interesting because in some respects, you know, on the one hand, you might have a child who's dealing with an eating disorder where they're, you know, not healthy because they're not eating or dieting or that kind of thing. On the other hand, we have our culture telling us, you know, you look great no matter what size you are, which isn't always necessarily healthy either. If someone is overweight or obese, you know, they need to worry about their health. And so, how can a parent go about teaching their child about healthy eating and it not being all about their appearance, it being about being healthy?
That's a great question. And, you know, there is a very sound website and expert in our field, and her name is Ellen Satter. And she has a website that speaks to this in all different stages of raising children and how they relate to food and what is healthy and that kind of thing. So a lot of it's, her website is Ellen SatterInstitute.org. And what Ellen has done over her life is she's really passionate about teaching healthy boundaries with eating with kids, and then also good sound advice about body image and that kind of thing. So it's a great resource. There's a lot of webinars that you can watch on that, specific to whatever you might be dealing with. And she's just got a lot of great information on there about what your job is as a parent as far as kids relating to nutrition and eating, and what is the responsibility of the child or the adolescent. And so I just think it was something that I came across in school, and then as when I started having children myself, I really her book was kind of like my Bible as far as when you started getting into struggles with eating and that kind of thing. So I think that's a good resource. Again, eatright.org has a lot of great information on kids struggling with body image. But it's funny that my 12-year-old yesterday was talking to me and telling me that she had a lot of friends telling her that, you know, they think that she's looks so good and everything, but she feels like she's overweight. So we had a conversation that speaks to this topic specifically. And so it was a great opportunity to kind of coach her through how she was seeing herself and how she was determining whether the way she looked was matching up to with what people were, you know, telling her about. And this was at lunch as she was eating her lunch, and you know, their perception of her, the way she looked, was based on what her lunch looks like, which she packs, but some of the nutritional concepts that we've been talking about throughout her life. And it's interesting how kids can get off in their body image. And so that's really important. And I think that the biggest thing is just a lot of talk time with kids to redirect and to sniff out when there are disordered thinking in the way that they appear, and then pointing it back towards nutritional principles.
And speaking to that, meeting them where they are, it leads me right into often when these kiddos are placed in a home, even when their environment is finally secure after having gone through a lot of difficulties in their past, they still continue to have some issues with eating. They'll either not eat at all, which was the case with my youngest, or they just overeat because they are afraid they're not going to have food at some point because they've already struggled with that in their past. So what advice would you give to a foster or adoptive parent, a new foster or adoptive parent who's just gotten a placement regarding the nutritional needs of their child and some of those struggles? What would your just off the top of your head advice be for those people?
For them. Okay, so the first thing that I think a very good resource for folks in that particular situation would be the EllenSatterInstitute.org. And she's got a great resources on there on, you really have to understand what the division of responsibilities are for parents and for kids. And then I think the biggest thing is just, like we talked about, meeting them where they are. And then just patience and understanding that of where they're coming from, number one, and then just being patient and continually to work through the transition of healing their heart, which that of course takes time, and understanding that some of the psychological, if they've come from some psychological abuse mm-hmm. and some of those issues as they come into play, you've really got to understand what those are so that when you are, that translating to the table and how they might use some of those issues that they have from their background. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you've got to understand that so that when you work with them at the table, you can see that really what's behind that not wanting to eat is something in a psychological aspect, and understanding that so that you can be patient and work through that as they continue to heal their heart. When I worked at the state hospital, we would see kids that had been in extreme situations with parents that had major untreated eating disorders. And so they would mirror that onto their children, and their children would survive in that situation and thus would have control issues with food in different situations. So we worked a lot with that in the hospital setting, and it was a lot of talking, and usually not at the table. It kind of gives you insight of how they would do that when they're feeding a doll or a stuffed animal. We would use that to, they would set a plate or set a table. We would play mealtime, and you could see some of that and then have conversations with them. And then I would always mimic a healthy, well, this is what I'm going to do for mine because I want them to have a healthy brain and institute some of those positive nutritional concepts in a playing environment. So that's something that was real helpful to me in the treatment facility with kids to get some good results. And it just takes time. It just takes time for insight to be developed, and for trust to be developed, and for them to translate that into their new way of walking forward, if that makes sense.
Yes, and that's so fascinating because for me personally, because for my youngest, who will be 9 this December, and she came to us at 12 months old, and she had pretty much been starved. She was 12 months old, she weighed 11 pounds. And so for mm-hmm. her, because she had learned to not, she had been conditioned to not have food, eating has just never right. been high on her priorities. And so she's tiny, tiny and underweight still. We've taken her to food school where she worked with an occupational therapist for over a year. She would eat for the occupational therapist and then come home, and I would give her the exact same food and she would not eat it for me. So, and I learned some right. things from right. the occupational therapist. This idea of not confronting the issue at the table sounds so mm-hmm. interesting, because then you can talk about how you would care, you know, especially if she's got her baby doll at a tea party, and, you know, you could talk about how you care for that baby doll to make sure the baby doll stays healthy. And then you can kind of see how that would transfer over into her life. And so to that end, you know, I've been through this for 8 years now. Initially, a registered dietitian told me to let her eat anything she would eat just to get the calories in her.
Yes.
So we done that for many, many years, but now her, she's very, very, very slowly beginning to add some foods to her list of foods she will eat. But she eats a lot of Nutella, which is terrible for you, you know, but it's calories. But in a situation like mine, then how do you make that transfer to begin to teach them about making healthy choices and continue to get the calorie count that they need to be gaining weight? She's not even on the weight chart yet.
Right. Okay. And so a lot of, I keep referring to this one website, but this is a lot of what Ellen Satter on her website speaks to, and she has a great healthy way of dealing with that. And it's going to take a lot of time to turn these things around. So that's the biggest thing I want to encourage you and applaud you on, all the efforts that you've done, because it's making a difference. Sometimes it just will not show itself until a later time. And so one of the things is, Kim, is just continue to show that behavior, and y'all having family meals and sitting down and you guys eating in a way of that you want her to learn. So if that continued, that is one way that she's being encouraged you can't see the effects of that now, but it will play out eventually. It just takes time sometimes.
And even between nutrition, I just want to interject that I think that the family meal together is just one of the most important foundations building a stronger family. I just cannot even say enough about sitting down to a meal together.
There's so much research that has been done on that particular issue, and it is just a huge, huge training opportunity and coaching opportunity that parents do not need to miss on many levels, on spiritual levels, on mental health level, and also on nutritional level. There are so much that can be taught at a table just by sharing a meal together. And so portion sizes can be taught if we're speaking to nutrition specifically. But even the fact of sitting down without any kind of distraction, that you're reinforcing, not only are you coaching that, you're reinforcing that. You get three opportunities a day to reinforce that. Sitting down for breakfast, that is something that is hard to do in the morning, but that is something that's so important. And so as time plays out, that will become their new normal. And so with kids that come from, like your daughter, just continuing to play that out. And then as she sees y'all eat healthy amounts, eventually, slowly, she will start accepting that also. So just sitting down together for a meal is number one. And then that's where your responsibility as a parent is to provide the nutritional foods that they need to have at meal. And then, you know, if we're talking about an underweight child, one thing that Ellen Satter teaches that I've done, we always have something for a dessert top thing at lunch and at dinner if that's what we have that day. And so for an underweight kid, their job is to put the food in their body for health. And so if that means that they start with whatever the portioned dessert is, then that's what they, because you're letting them have the control over what goes in their mouth. And that is a very important piece of the puzzle for kids that come from a background of maybe abuse, that they have control over that. And it can empower them to take the lead in their health. It starts with take the lead of getting the food in your body. And then eventually, as you continue to teach them the nutritional concepts, they will do that same mimicking of, I am in control of my health, and this is the outcome I want. This is the path I want to be on. And so these are the things that I'm going to do to get myself to that healthy end. And so that's some of the modeling that you can do.
Yes, and that's something we've actually been working on with our 10-year-old who is also comes from a foster background. She and my youngest are half sisters. Well, they're full sisters now, but they're half sisters from a biological standpoint. But the baby, my 10-year-old, came to us at 2.5, and she had been used to scavenging for food. And so she has very little control over her eating. And it's something we're working with her. And there's just this balancing act between helping our youngest get the calories in that she needs and helping this 10-year-old not to just gorge every opportunity she has to put food in her mouth. And, you know, we're trying to help her learn because she literally does not have any self-control when it comes to food. And so it's going to have to be a complete learned behavior for her to understand what is an appropriate amount of food and what is the right kind of food. And there's so many emotions attached to food that, you know, the little one is getting Nutella, but I'm not supposed to have Nutella. It seems so unfair, but, you know, we've tried to explain to her that we want to meet the needs of each child and that her needs look different than the youngest.
Well, okay. So like in the instance of that, you know, the biggest thing for, so you've got two competing needs at your table, but one thing that Ellen Satter, that she really teaches is that there is no bad food, of course. And so having portion size is everything. And so as kids get older and teaching to stay within a good weight for health, you know, it's about, okay, so, you know, I can have a teaspoon of Nutella, but my sister might get to have a little bit more because she is growing and she's at a different different place than I am. And so some of that is would be one strategy that I might institute just because of where your older one comes from and scavenging and that kind of thing. And so there's specific webinars and things on Ellen's website that speak to all of these issues specifically. And it's a very easily navigable website that you can look at different feeding problems and solutions, meals and snacks. She's got a great, and one of her books that she has, Feeding Children, she has a great meal plan that you can follow. And so, you know, we have portioned out desserts, and that's what, you know, at our meals, you know, my kids know that this is the dessert and this is what the portion is. So having different, you know, like my 17-year-old, she has put on a little bit of weight. So we've talked about how healthily, how are we going to strategize to change that for yourself? And so she uses a different container for her dessert versus the 13-year-old. So there's different strategies like that that you can teach her to learn to have the control and how to manage that herself with making sure that she has the goal. This is the path that I want to be on. And that is the talk, is what is my ultimate goal? Where do I want to be health-wise? That's got to be really established in the child's mind as to their level, for them to own any change and how doing the little things at the point of eating, they've got to have some goal in mind. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Why?
Such an excellent suggestion for her age, because she's at that preteen age where she wants to exercise a lot of independence. And so she would absolutely love that she gets to kind of take charge of that area of her life. So that's a great suggestion for her specifically. Before we go any further, because you've mentioned this website several times, can you spell the last name Ellen Satter? Is it S-A-T-T-E-R?
Sure. Yeah, it's E-L-L-Y-N is her first name. Satter, S-A-T-T-E-R, institute.org.
Okay.
And it's a great resource. And some of, you know, a lot of it, she is just really, really healthy, in my opinion, from where I have been working in the mental health sector, about setting or teaching what your job is as the parent, what the child's job is, and just your division of responsibility for meals and nutrition and all of that good stuff. Just some really good information about getting those boundaries and those kind of things set up, so that we as parents, sometimes we can get bogged down of, I've got to get them to eat more calories, or I've got to get them to eat more fruits and vegetables. How you can approach those food struggles that happen a lot with all kinds of families, how to handle that and take some of that weight off of you, so that you can be about learning about good sound nutrition principles and how to coach that through their lifespan. Be busy about those kind of things and let them start taking control of that area of their life, which will serve them so much better when they're adults.
Absolutely.
When they learn those concepts and learn some of that, taking the independence of doing this because I want to have good brain health. I don't want to be sick all the time. I want to do good in school.
Absolutely. And you mentioned, you know, how the nutrition plays in them doing well in school. So can you speak to that about nutritional health and mental health and how those two things are tied together?
Well, we could spend an entire webinar talking about that. The research is so widespread in this topic, and it's just kind of exploding at this point in history. A lot of the research that you're going to find in the area of mental health versus related to nutritional health is going to be in the functional and integrative therapy modalities. And a lot of, there's so many wonderful sources of information out there for this. One kind of mainstay in this area is a MD by the name of Mark Heinemann has a lot of books and websites that has great information on how this he was one of the first ones that started talking about this. And he had one of his first books is called The Ultra Mind Solution. And it talks a lot about depression and how a lot of times depression can be related to a multitude of causes. Sometimes a lot of it is situational based on what's going on in our life, but a lot of it also can be nutritional deficiencies such as folate, B6, or B12 deficiencies, maybe how your thyroid is functioning, or things that your brain is kind of having an autoimmune response to. And so you hear a lot about gluten-free diets, mercury poisoning, or like organic. Why are we doing organic? Why are we concerned about things in our plastics like BPA? So a lot of that is where a lot of the wonderful information that's coming out about how those things affect the nutritional, what we are taking in our body, how does that affect our mental health and how we feel about things and how we can deal with stressors in our life.
You touched on the different deficiencies and intolerances that we're seeing these days, and I wanted to ask you specifically about that. I keep talking about my family, but apparently food and nutrition plays a big role in a lot of different areas. My oldest daughter, who's 23, has recently started eating gluten-free because she realized that she was very intolerant. She tried dairy-free, that wasn't as helpful. And so she's now eating gluten-free. But so I wanted to ask you with regards to that, are you seeing that scientific data supports a rise in any particular nutritional deficiencies in American culture, and have causes of that, or are there not? Is it just a rise in awareness?
Both of those. I think that the Western diet, which is the typical American diet, is really starting to show the effects of itself over time. And a lot of the disease states that you're seeing become epidemics in our culture. You know, Alzheimer's one, that's something that Mark Hyman has called diabesity of the brain because of too much added sugars. And, you know, back in the 80s when I was in school, you know, the low carb diets and that kind of thing, some of that is leading itself a little bit to some of the Alzheimer's that we're seeing a lot of, because our brains need carbohydrates to function. And so that's something, the Western diet is a big part of the problem, the way we eat. And then also, so a lot of times I think it's also awareness and some of the things that we've discovered biochemically about our body. Some of the research that's come out has changed so much since when I was in school in the 80s. It's amazing what they have come up with and what we understand more about our bodies. So I think that that's both of those. I think I'm answering your question, but I think it's both of those things. So there's just a lot more information out there about, specifically when we're speaking to gluten. A lot of people, a lot of times gluten, it's an immune response over a long period of time that has caused your body to not process gluten, which is a carbohydrate found in wheat. And so a lot of times that's what it is. And so the question is that environmental? Is that your particular DNA? What is that? And that's still where the research is going at this time, is to find that out. What all is that? But no matter where research is, I think it's awesome when people really listen to their bodies, which is what God created our bodies to do. And we start looking for, we do not have to accept that we have to feel tired, depressed, and overweight. And we don't have to do that, because God created our bodies to tell us when we have something going on. And nutrition can fix a lot of the struggles that we have in America with the way some of the disease states that we see. Western diet, a lot of times you hear that term. It is a diet that is usually high in omega-6s instead of healthy fats like omega-3s found in like fish, eggs, that kind of thing. It's usually from over-processed foods, and that is a hot topic right now. And any kind of media that you hear, eating whole foods or eating a clean diet, a lot of people speak of it in that realm. So anything, and so my 13-year-old the other day came in and was like, what is processed food? Because I would say, you know, you need to eat less processed food. So, and I kept telling her that, and I hadn't backed up and spent the time speaking with her about the, what is a processed food. So we went into the pantry and we started looking at some things that would be considered processed food. And a lot of the things, a lot of the things that are conveniently packaged for us, even unit dose packaging, so Cheez-Its and that kind of thing, that that's just a part of the American diet. A lot of people love that packaged item because it's convenient and quick to grab. And so a lot of times that is the biggest area that families can make a huge impact in their family's nutritional health, is just really being intentional about cutting down on prepackaged processed foods, things that are not grown on a tree or come out of the ground, that are usually packaged in unit dose items that make it easy on us. So it is, it takes extra time to eat healthy and nutritionally sound, but the dividends and the payoff is huge when you start getting into the educational issues, if you're having attention issues, and then also as you grow older, not developing some of those disease states that happen from these micro deficiencies that can happen when we eat a lot of processed foods instead of whole foods, meaning grass-fed meat, fish and chicken and those kind of things, lots of fruits and vegetables and whole grains, and, you know, dried beans and seeds and that kind of stuff.
Well, given
how spoiled, a lot of information.
Yeah, no, it's great. Given how spoiled we are as a culture to those convenience foods, are there things in the grocery store that would fall more in the category of, you know, not a processed food, but still can be fairly convenient as a mom, pack a lunch or those kind of things?
Exactly. That packing a lunch, boy, we could, that's another hot topic, isn't it? It's packing lunches. A lot of kids pack their lunch and it's so easy to go and grab the unit dose crackers and cookies and that kind of thing. And we don't want to limit. I mean, we don't want to completely cut that out of our kids' diet, but there's a lot of things, you know, being prepared is the biggest key for that. And so as far as packaged foods, you know, my kids occasionally will have things like Cheez-Its, but I do the smaller packaged ones, or we package it ourselves in snack size bags. So I guess serving sizes would be the biggest thing, mm-hmm. is making sure that it is just that 1 ounce serving of things. So the amount is the biggest thing. But, you know, there are some things, it's harder with packaged foods because there's not as many that are just hugely healthy, like single dose cheese sticks. That's a good thing, mm-hmm. if dairy is not an issue with your family. We just package a lot of stuff ourselves. So we will go get, you know, cubing cheese a lot of cut up fruits and vegetables. So I guess convenience things in the grocery store would be pre-cut up fruit and vegetables is always a great option to have.
And, so that's things that are in the produce section, like the cut up celery or the cut up apples. Have they added things to those to make them last longer? And do those things hurt us?
Sometimes, yes. And you can always check the label. They're supposed to let you know that. Sometimes they will put preservatives, the equivalent of fruit fresh, you know, that kind of preservative to keep them longer. Yes, that can definitely happen. But if you, you know, if you buy organic things, some of that prepackaged organic stuff, that is not going to have as much of the preservatives put on it as other. And that's what I'm speaking to also, is just buying those fruits and vegetables and cutting them up yourself is always the best option. Yeah. And sometimes the less expensive option most times. So it takes time.
You've mentioned organic foods a couple of times as far as fruits and vegetables go. Can you explain, because organic foods can be pricier than other foods. Yes. Can you explain when it's important to eat organic as far as our health goes and when it's okay to just buy the normal, not organic?
Exactly. Boy, I get asked this a lot of the time. And I think a lot of times the fruits and vegetables, you know, a lot of times it has to do with how they grow the foods and what kind of pesticides they put in the food. So when you get into a lot of functional integrative practitioners like Mark Hyman and those kind of people, they feel like that there's a lot of pesticides and stuff that wreak havoc in our bodies. And so from their standpoint, some of the nutritional experts organic is important when you get into fruits and vegetables, especially ones that you will not be peeling or cooking specifically. So apples, orange, you're going to peel that. So banana, you would peel, but like with your berries, those kind of things. those are the things that you are going to want to, if you're going to concentrate your dollars in a specific organic area, that would be something that I would do.
So my 21-year-old, the one that's a nutritional sciences major, called me this last spring, and she was like, "Mom, you've got to quit feeding the girls white tuna." And I was like, "What?" Because that was kind of a staple for us. So I always bought albacore tuna. And she said, it's yes. bad for the brain development because the white tuna, the albacore tuna, swim at a different level of the ocean than the other tuna, and they get more mercury in them, and it can be in the tuna, and then that impacts brain development in children. And I was like, I've never heard this before, and I immediately went to the regular tuna instead of the albacore. Are there other tricks of the trade that you might want to share with our audience before I let you go? Just fun little things that we might need to know that we had no clue?
Well, I think that is a great one, and that's one of those integrative and functional integrative concepts, is just being aware of that kind of information as far as metal toxicity. And you can go to the functional integrative websites and get that kind of specific information about that. It can be overwhelming, isn't it, when you find these little tidbits of information out about that. But I think that is probably one of the biggest ones as far as when you're talking about doing seafood, is understanding which ones are higher in mercury and which ones are lower. And that's just an easy search on the internet to get that exhaustive list down, because it can be long. I think that's an important piece of information to know, you know, high levels of mercury are in these types of fish. But I think the biggest thing from my standpoint is going to be added sugars. Is that crazy?
No.
That is what I'm going to tell you. But I think added sugars is a huge piece of the puzzle, as far as the research has shown that sugar is toxic to our bodies, and it causes overall inflammation. And when we are inflamed, our bodies start doing a bunch of biochemical processes to protect it and try to clear that out, which makes our bodies really tired over time. So I think added sugars is the biggest thing that families need to be watching. And so 25 grams a day for women and 35 grams a day for men, and for kids about 25 grams. So when you start looking at labels and using those handy dandy labels, you can follow that in your families. If you're the main purchaser of your food sources, you can be looking at that and use that as a strategy. And when you're assessing whether a food is something that is worthwhile on the calories, how many added grams of added sugar they have. And so I think it can be shocking sometimes. Even things that you think are healthy, it can be shocking to find out how many grams of added sugar they have, and using that as a tool. But just simply watching as you're purchasing, just really keeping things under when you're looking at a product, if it's got 9 grams of added sugar, I mean, that's almost half of what you can have. And mm-hmm. So when you start really applying just that at the point of picking that each individual one as the food comes into the house, because that's one of our responsibilities as parents, is making sure that the food sources in our houses are going to lead our kids on the path of having a healthy lifestyle for their brain, gut, and nutritional health. So just even at the point of just picking those products will help that.
Before I let you go, I mean, you've given us so much technology and sites and things to go to where we can do our own research. But if we have a family out there who is having some very specific nutritional issues with their children, and they feel like they need more personal one-on-one help, obviously this is something that you do on a regular basis, but is the first step that they go to their primary care physician? Do they need a referral to find a registered dietitian, what is the best way for them to be in contact with a registered dietitian who can help them one-on-one?
That's a great, great question. And yes, your primary care physician will be the first line of defense to find help in getting nutritional help specific to whatever it is might be the issues in your particular situation. So I think always going to an MD or DO, your primary health would be a great opportunity for you to find that. Then on eatright.org, there also are links where you can find a nutritionist in your area. But a lot of times, I think most physicians will have nutritionists that they work with collaboratively that will give you a great opportunity to get some of those issues worked out on a one-to-one basis. And the support of it is just huge to have someone speak to your specific issue. So I used to do supermarket tours, and a lot of times on those supermarket tours, that's what I really like to do because you want to have information that's going to help you specifically. So always, you know, seeking out the good sound nutritional advice from a dietitian through your primary care is a great way to go about that.
That's great. Well, Carrie, thanks so much for joining us today. I could talk to you all day about my family, but I'm just so grateful. I feel like it's just been a great resource, and hopefully our families will benefit from this, and we'll talk about a different subject next time. Thanks for joining us.
Awesome. You're so welcome. Thanks for having me.